Okay, thank you very much. It's good to be back. I want to just say a brief thank you to the sponsors of this shiur, Sharon and Rabbi Rafal Alman, sponsored in memory of Sharon's grandmother, Carrie Ann Kess, Zichrona Livracha. We thank you very much for that sponsorship. I also want to just throw in just a word of mazel tov to Rabbi Kelman, whose son got married earlier this week. I just found out, which is why he's not with us here today. Okay, so during the course of the next few weeks, we're going to be looking rather carefully, which is why this title of this series is a deep dive, at a few elements of the tefillos, of the prayers of the high holiday season of the Yomim Noraim. The third and fourth weeks are going to focus on particular elements of first the Rosh Hashanah and then the Yom Kippur davening. What we're going to be spending these first 2 weeks on is a close look at the changes that are made in the Shemona Esrei during the course of the entire Aseres Yemei Tshuva. And as we're going to explain in a moment, with a particular focus on one group of the changes that are made to the Shemona Esrei. And part of the what's going to arise out of this study together is not just learning about these rather small and brief lines which we add to the Shemona Esrei, but looking very carefully at these lines opens up a couple of windows into a understanding certain probably somewhat surprising things about the Shemona Esrei itself, which we will learn about in due time. Okay, so during the course of Aseres Yemei Tshuva, starting with the night of Rosh Hashanah and continuing through Ne'ilah, there are several changes that are made to the Shemona Esrei. There are two particularly prominent changes that are made to the Shemona Esrei, with regard to which the word change actually is apropos, which is that we change the most central words of two of the brachos of the Shemona Esrei, those words being the text of the actual bracha that concludes one of the 19 brachos of Shemona Esrei. Of course, we're referenced to changing Hakel HaKadosh to HaMelech HaKadosh at the end of the third bracha, and changing Melech Ohed Tzedakah U'Mishpat to HaMelech HaMishpat in one of the middle brachos of the Shemona Esrei. So in a certain sense, those are the most significant of the changes that we make, because we are toying with the central text of the brachos themselves. And understanding the import of those changes is of significance, although when it comes to thinking about the theme and meaning of those changes, it would seem pretty clear that the meaning and the theme is frankly relatively simple. I don't know if I could spend an hour talking about those changes to the Shemona Esrei. I could probably spend an hour talking about the halachos that relate to those changes in the Shemona Esrei, but with regard to the meaning and the themes, it's rather straightforward that during Aseres Yemei Tshuva, our interaction with God is dominated by our sense of him as our melech, as our king, among the various ways in which we think about and interact with him. That's, of course, the grand theme of Aseres Yemei Tshuva. And so we change the text of the Shemona Esrei in those two places to reflect that theme. And so those two rather glaring changes are not going to be the focus of what we're going to be learning about this week and next. I'd like to focus on what, from a technical perspective, certainly a halachic perspective, are the more minor changes to the Shemona Esrei, which are not really changes, but rather additions to the Shemona Esrei. The four rather brief lines that we add to the Shemona Esrei in four different places. Every one of which, if you read it, its meaning is rather simple. But as we're going to see, if we look at them more carefully, there's a lot more to understand about them, both in terms of their content and their context. So I'd like to begin by simply looking through these four additions to the Shemona Esrei with you, and we're going to actually look at them in reverse order. We'll for various reasons. And as we look at them, I'd like us to be thinking about one particular question about them. I'm going to put it on the screen in a moment. In each of these lines of tefillah, we are davening for something, but we are davening for something for a certain group of people. And I want us to look at these texts with the question in mind, for whom are we davening when we offer these tefillos? Okay, so let me put this up on the screen. This booklet of sources consists entirely just of the Shemona Esrei. So if you want to be looking at your own Siddur, you're welcome to. But this is simply Shemona Esrei from the Rinat Yisrael Siddur. And as I said, we're going to work backwards. So I'm starting on the last page. The last addition that we make to the Shemona Esrei is in the very last line, where we add this. The Sefer, in the book of Chaim, Bracha, V'Shalom, Ufarnasa Tova, the book of life, of blessing, of peace, and of a good livelihood, Nizacher, may we be remembered or mentioned, V'Nikasev, Lefanecha, and may we be inscribed before you. So we are asking, may we be inscribed before God in the book of life and blessing and peace and livelihood. Anachnu, we, V'chol Amcha Beis Yisrael, and the entire nation of the Jewish people, L'chaim tovim u'l'shalom. And what should be the content of that inscription in that book? It should be for a good life and for peace. That's the tefillah that we add, a tefillah which is, of course, completely apropos for the Aseres Yemei Tshuva season, for the Yom HaNoraim season, in which you're asking to be inscribed in the book of life. Now, so to raise the question I was saying before, for whom are we davening? And so here the answer is very explicit. Anachnu v'chol amcha beis Yisrael. We are asking for us and for the entire Jewish people, right? This is a tefillah, as is much of the Shemona Esrei, a tefillah for the Jewish people at large. Okay, working backwards to the previous addition to the Shemona Esrei, the shortest of the additions, we ask, uchsov l'chayim tovim, we say to Hashem, inscribe for a good life, kol b'nei v'risecha, all the members of your bris, of your covenant. Okay, so the theme here is exactly the same as this theme in B'Sefer Chaim, the first text that we did a moment ago. This case much more abbreviated. We are asking to be inscribed for a good life. And again, for whom are we davening? Kol b'nei v'risecha, all the members of your covenant. Again, a reference to the Jewish people. When we skip backwards to near the beginning of the Shemona Esrei, we get to the other pair of additions. And we get here to this one, where we say the following, Micha Mocha Av HaRachamim, who is like you, the Father of Mercy, Zocher Yitzurav L'chayim, who remembers his creations for life, Berachamim, with mercy. Okay, so we are praising God for, in fact, mercifully remembering his creations. And here, there is a shift in the answer to the question that we raised before. For whom are we davening here? So here, the text of the tefillah is rather explicit, right? That we are no longer talking about anachnu v'chal amcha beis Yisrael, we and the entire Jewish people. We're no longer talking about b'nei v'risecha, the members of the covenant. Here, we are referring to Hashem remembering Yitzurav, right? All of his creations, which now, you, of course, in theory, could interpret creations to refer to creations even beyond human beings, but it's rather obvious that that's not what's being referred to here, most likely. But the tefillah here is not limiting itself to the Jewish people, but is rather a reference to humanity at large. Let me take a 1 minute detour here. I already initially read the tefillah this way, but if we're doing a deep dive into these tefillos, we should also take a moment to talk about the simple proper way to say these tefillos. It often happens in the course of the davening that sometimes the kind of poetic rhythm of a phrase or of a line leads to our reading the sentence in a certain way that is actually incorrect. And it's worth taking note of the fact that this line, especially in the sing-song that it's with which it's usually done by the chazan, is almost always read incorrectly. Right. This is usually read the second half of this. We Nichamocha v'rachamim, who is like you, Hashem, Zocher Yitzurav l'chayim berachamim. Right. People usually pause after Yitzurav and before the word l'chayim. Okay. But if you pay attention to the meaning of the sentence, that's obviously incorrect. Right. The proper way to read this phrase is Zocher Yitzurav l'chayim, who remembers his creations for life, berachamim, with mercy. The word with mercy is modifying the Zocher, is modifying the way in which God remembers his creations. It's not modifying the chayim. Okay, so that's the second, but we're working backwards, the third of the additions to the Shmoneh Esrei. And as we've noted, this tefillah references the humanity at large rather than just the Jewish people. We now conclude with what's really the first, but the fourth in our list of the additions to the Shemoneh Esrei. Zachreinu l'chayim, remember us for life, melech chafetz b'chayim, the king who desires life. Right? We describe God, we describe Hashem as one who actually has an interest, right? Who prefers life. He created life, right? So that's his desire that people be living. And we ask him that's how we describe him. And in the context of asking him to remember for life, v'chasveinu b'sefer achayim, and inscribe us in the book of life, l'ma'ancha, for your sake, Elohim chayim, the living God. Okay. So one could view this tefillah as a little bit, a little bit of a snow job, if you will, a little bit underhanded, right? We're kind of almost like winking at God as we say to him, well, you're the one who wants this. It's not just us who want life. This is what you have said that you want, and that should be a reason for you to respond positively to this entreaty, to this tefillah. Do it for your sake, not just for ours. Okay, now what about the question that we've been asking during the course of going through these various texts? For whom are we davening in this tefillah, right? So this tefillah, this addition to the Shemoneh Esrei, is the first one of the four that we have looked at where the answer to the question that we're raising is not explicit, right? It's not obvious. And each one of the other tefillos was explicit, right? Anachnu v'chol amcha beis Yisrael, kol b'nei v'risecha, references to the Jewish people, and Yitzurav, which was a reference to humanity at large. Here, the only thing we have is a pronoun, right? Who are we davening for? So the only thing it says is nu, right? Zachrei nu and chasvei nu, which means us. We're davening for us. Now, that obviously involves a kind of ambiguity. Who is the us that we are davening for here in this tefillah? Us could mean the Jewish people. Us could mean human beings in general. Us also could mean something else. There's a third possible meaning for us. I'm sorry, the host of the meeting, what's your name? I apologize. You're muted.
The third meaning could be the congregation.
Okay, Sang, I was going to ask you to unmute everyone for a moment. Yeah, thank you. Yes, exactly, right? So the us in a tefillah could also refer to us meaning the people in the room, right? Because davening is primarily supposed to be done b'tzibur, so it's to be done in a community, and certainly on the Yom Narayim, even more so. The plural could refer to the community, or perhaps maybe not just the people in the room, but the kehila that one is a part of. So much of davening is in the plural, and could be understood to some degree in that way. There's another element here in what we've been doing, which could, if you want, be a vote in favor of understanding Zachreinu and Chasveinu in that sense. If you go back to the first one that we did at the end of the Shmona Esrei, right? What did it say? It asked Hashem to remember and inscribe in the Book of Life. Who is he supposed to inscribe?
Anachnu, Israel, right?
Anachnu, ve'chalam chabes Israel, us and all of the Jewish people. Well, if who's the us then? If it's the us and all of the Jewish people, right? So here it would seem the us, the anachnu, is in fact a reference to some smaller group of people, right? Meaning we in this room, we in this kehila, right? So that's what the we means there. And so you could then interpret the Zachreinu and the Chasveinu also as a reference to the particular group of people that's davening together. That being said, my intuition tells me that that's probably incorrect. I mean, you certainly feel free to disagree. I think that if you have to look at this Zachreinu L'chaim in context, right? These lines that we're talking about that are added to the Shmona Esrei are not just, randomly pasted in, right? Somebody made a choice to insert these lines in particular locations in the Shmona Esrei. This line is inserted in the middle of the first bracha of the Shmona Esrei. Well, what's the context of the Zohar? Whenever you have a pronoun, the first thing you should do is to look to the antecedent of the pronoun, right? Who is the us that's being talked about? Well, let's look at the line that comes before. And so if you look at the first bracha of Shmona Esrei that this is in the context of, right? Elokei Abraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, Zocher Chasdei Avos, right? That we talk about Hashem as remembering the kindnesses of our forefathers, Umevi Goel Livnei V'nehem, and brings a redeemer to their descendants, to their grandchildren. And then we say, Zachreinu l'chayim, melech hafeitz b'chayim, remember us. So it seems from context, most likely, that here too, just as was the case in the later additions to the Shmona Esrei for Aseres Yemei Tshuva, that the us that we're talking about here probably means, in fact, the Jewish people at large. And that's whom we are davening for here. Which means that if we now look more broadly at the four additions that we have here to the Shmona Esrei, it's notable and noticeable that we have three of them which are placed in the more parochial context of the Jewish people, and one of them which is not. Right. I'll now start speaking about them in their actual order rather than the backwards order which we did them. Okay. The first, the third, and the fourth, Zachreinu and Uchsov and the Sefer Chaim, all are tefilos for the Jewish people, for to be inscribed in the Book of Life. And the second one, Micha Mocha, is about humanity at large. And so that begs the question of, well, why is that? Of course, it's not strange that we sometimes daven more for just ourselves, and sometimes we daven for humanity. But this noticing this phenomenon in the text of the Shmona Esrei should lead us to explore a little bit further. What is it about each one of these tefilos that lends itself to that group, to that context? And more specifically, what is it about the second one that's different from all of the others? So what we're going to begin to do now is to do what we just did with Zachreinu L'chaim, for the other three as well. Right? What we just did for Zachreinu L'chaim was we said, okay, let's take a look at the context in which this line appears. Which bracha of Shmona Esrei is it in? And how does that inform our expectations and our interpretation of that line of the davening? Okay. So what we just said with regard to Zachrinu L'chaim is that we looked at it somewhat narrowly, and we said, well, you know, who is it talking about? And we noted that the previous line is a very specific reference to the Jewish people, to the Avos, to their descendants, who are us. And that's why we interpreted Zachrinu as being a tefillah for the Jewish people. But let's expand on this a little bit, right? What is this particular tefillah doing in this part of the Shmona Esrei, in this bracha? Now, I want to take a moment to call attention to something which is not going to be the focus of this of our class here, but it feels like something that should be mentioned at least briefly or momentarily, which is that the very fact that we add these tefillos to the Shmona Esrei where we do is a little bit odd, okay? Because generally speaking, the first three brachos of the Shmona Esrei are a part of the Shmona Esrei in which we're not asking for things. We're not really supposed to be asking for things. And generally, it's in fact halachically forbidden to throw in requests in the first three brachos of Shmona Esrei. It's perfectly acceptable and encouraged for people to add their own tefillos to the other brachos of Shmona Esrei during the week, where we're asking for things, or we're welcome to ask for more things as long as they're relevant to the theme of that bracha. But in the first three brachos of Shmona Esrei, that's not really something we normally do. And so that's actually a halachic discussion that needs to be had of, you know, why was the first bracha of Shmona Esrei interrupted at all? And why especially is it interrupted with a request, which seems out of place in that bracha of Shmona Esrei? Okay, so I'm just pointing out that problem, but it's not a problem I'm going to be addressing here in this shiur. For the purposes of our discussion here, we're going to accept that there is a justification for this tefillah being added, and we're going to focus on its meaning rather than its justification. Okay, so what is this tefillah doing in this bracha? Okay, so what is the theme of the first bracha of the Shmona Esrei? Well, the theme of this siddur gives each bracha, as many siddurim do, gives each bracha a little header, a title, right? This bracha is the bracha of Avos. It's the bracha that's about our ancestors. It starts by talking about Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and it ends Magen Avraham, okay? So that's true. This bracha talks about God, who is of course a universal God, but it begins the Shmona Esrei by talking about the unique and special relationship that God has with the Jewish people that's rooted historically in the relationship that he established and developed and the covenant that he established with our Avos and Imams. That's all true. Except that that's not the whole story. What about the Avos is the theme of this bracha? The bracha doesn't say anything about Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and, you know, how great they are, right? What does this bracha do with the Avos, maybe to ask the question a little bit crudely? Anybody have a quick comment? Yeah.
Zechut Avot, we ask for Zechut Avot.
Exactly, right? How does the bracha conclude? It doesn't say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokei Avraham, right? The God of Avraham. It's Baruch Atah Hashem Magen Avraham, right? Which means the protector of Avraham. And so a centerpiece of the theme of this bracha is that Hashem's having established a relationship with the Jewish people involved him taking care of us. And the specific theme of the bracha is that, well, why does he take care of us? He takes care of us, as you said, bizchut avot, as a result of the merit of our ancestors that he, this is a topic for a shir and sefer brachos, but for one reason or another, God chose Avraham and the Yaakov's descendants, right, as his chosen people. But part of the deal, so to speak, part of his relationship is that he has a special interest in the Jewish people and looks out for us, but he does it because of the zechus, the merit of our ancestors. That's why we we say, after we describe the greatness of God, right? Gibor, he's great and he's mighty and he's awesome and he's up on high. And yet, what's his relationship with us? Gomel chasadim tovim, but he does great kindnesses. And zocher chaste avos, he remembers the chesed of our ancestors. And as a consequence of that, he's mevi goel of nevenehem, right? He brings redemption to his descendants. Now, there are multiple themes here. I don't mean to be claiming that there's only one thing going on here. There's certainly more than one thing going on here. And it's in fact, an interesting dichotomy in the themes that are going on here. But the reason why I'm focusing on this one is because it leads into the explanation for why Zachreinu L'chaim is here, right? So here we are saying our Shmona Esrei. And we're talking about how, you know, there are the great avos and Hashem does kindnesses for us and brings redemption for us because he remembers their greatness, right? Now, that's all very nice. And most of the year when we say the Shmona Esrei, so we say that and then we move on. Magen Avram, move on to the next bracha. But if we're saying Shmona Esrei during Aseres Yemei Tshuva, saying Shmona Esrei on Rosh Hashanah, if we are at all attuned to the magic of the moment, if we are all attuned to the spirit of what is going on at that time, if we are starting a Shmona Esrei at the time that the Ribono Shel Olam is sitting at the Kisei Hadin, he's sitting on the throne of judgment, right? Then how could we possibly say Zocher Chaste Avos Umevi Goel of Nevenehem, right? He remembers the greatness of our ancestors and he brings redemption to our people. Well, what are we automatically, again, if our minds are properly attuned to the moment, what are we thinking? He brings redemption to us, to his descendants. Well, right now is when, whether or not that's really going to happen this year is being decided, right? And so it's overwhelmingly natural for at that moment for us to say, well, you know, to offer a little tefillah, you know, could you please actually do that right now? Okay. So if we just said, Zocher chaste avos umevi goel of nevenehem, so immediately our thought is, well, Zachreinu l'chaim melech hafetz b'chaim, right? Then remember us and please bring us that life as a consequence of the Zechus Avos that we were just talking about. And that also helps explain that line, Melech Chafetz Bachayim, right? The God who desires life, which I described before as almost like a sneaky, way to talk to God, right? But what might it be a reference to in this context? Well, we just got through saying that Hashem established a special relationship with the Jewish people as a result of the Zechus of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And this is a relationship that he initiated, that he wants to have, right? So there's a certain logic, right, to this tefillah being suddenly inserted here at this moment. Now, I don't want to take too long with this. I will, so I'm not going to elaborate on this other point that I'm about to mention. I'll just mention it quickly, which is it's also worth noting that I mentioned before that there's a dichotomy to the theme of this bracha, right? One part of it is the Zechus Avos, right? That Hashem is being kind to the descendants of the Avos and their merit. There's another element of this bracha, which is Lema'an Shemo, right? That God does things in his own interest, right? For his own glory, right? And that's alluded to in the Zachreinu L'chaim also with the end, L'ma'ancha Elokim Chaim, right? So there's this addition builds upon both of the themes of this bracha. Somebody was just saying something.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Hi. Yeah. It's Rebecca Hertzfeld. Like, let's say Rashi with Lech Lecha, he'll say, like, you know, like, it's for Hashem's sake, right? Like the Lech Lecha that, like, Hashem was framing it for Abraham, like, that, oh, it's like L'tovatcha L'hanatcha. So
right. Is
it really sort of strange that we're sort of saying that to Hashem, like, it's L'tovatcha L'hanatcha that, like, oh, so that other nations don't speak badly about Hashem. You know, I mean, Masei Adai Tovei Bayam, we also had that with, you know, with Shirat Hayam. So, like, is it really so strange that we're doing this?
I didn't say it was strange. I'm not sure. Oh, you're saying that when I called it a kind of sneaky kind of feel, you're saying, well, that's normal. Okay, I can accept that, right? In other words, you know, that the what you're saying is that this kind of thing just isn't so unusual. And you might be right. You might be right.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Rabbi, there's another reason. There's another reason why I think this belongs right here. And that is Melech Chafetz B'Chaim, I think, is all, and Magen Avraham has to do with the Akedah. And therefore, that's why you stick it in here.
Interesting. Okay. That's a sort of a much a kind of second level analysis here, right? Of kind of expect that you're kind of expecting allusions to the Akedah when you're talking about Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and especially talking about their chesed. And okay, could be. Could be. Okay. So that's with regard to a closer look at the relationship between this tefillah and the bracha in which it appears. Okay. Now, I'm going to skip around a little bit here for various reasons. I want to now go to the last bracha. I want to go do the simpler ones first, and then the more complex ones. If we go to the end of the Shemoneh Esrei, and we look at this edition, the Sefer Chaim Bracha V'Shalom, right? We ask Hashem to inscribe us and the rest of the Jewish people into the book of life and bracha and peace. Now, both with regard to the initial issue of for whom are we davening, in this case for the Jewish people, as well as with regard to the themes, right? Let's look at the relationship between this and the theme of the bracha in which it appears. Now, in this case, we're not going to have to dwell on this for more than a couple of seconds, right? It doesn't really get any more obvious, right? The text that we add here is virtually a repetition of the text of the bracha itself, just adding the focus of Aseres Yemei Tshuva, that this is the time when we are being inscribed for the coming year, right? So what is this tefillah all about? Tefillah of Shalom, where we are, Sim Shalom Tova Vracha, we ask Hashem to provide peace and goodness and blessing and mercy, Aleinu V'Yalko Yisrael Amecha, on us and all the Jewish people, right? So the tefillah of B'Sefer Chayim Bracha V'Shalom Farnas HaTova Nizachar B'Nikasi V'Fanecha Nachna B'Chol Amcha Beis Yisrael is basically a almost verbatim echoing and repetition of the text of the bracha itself, even up to and including the Aleinu V'Yalko Yisrael Amecha, right, us and the rest of the Jewish people. Tov Beinacha Lavarecha Samcha Yisrael B'chalei Sifchal Shah, right? So this is a bracha about peace and goodness for the Jewish people. And so all we simply do is add a line that says, well, now that it's Rosh Hashanah or it's Teres Yemei Tshuva, please inscribe us in that book for the coming. So this is very straightforward. There's not that much to say about this edition to Shemoneh Esrei and its context. There's one little twist here, which if we wanted to explore, we could. I'm not going to, maybe we'll spend just a few seconds on it. There is one thing in this added line that actually does not necessarily appear in the rest of the bracha that comes before it, that is, one might argue, is new. Anybody see what it is?
Parnasa tova.
Right. Parnasa tova, right? A good living, a good livelihood, and a tefillah for economic support or economic stability, which does not appear explicitly in this bracha before now. Okay, so that's of some interest. It might very well be that is, in a certain sense, simply the most basic meaning of the word bracha in the original text, right? Sim Shalom Tova Avracha, peace, goodness, and blessing. Well, blessing often is a reference to, you know, abundance. And so the Parnasa Tova might simply be an interpretation or an elaboration of the word bracha in here. If it's not, then there is something more to say perhaps about the addition of Parnasa and how central it is to so many people's needs as the new year starts. But by and large, there's not that much to say about B'Sefer Chaim and its context in the last bracha of Shmoneh Esrei. It fits like a glove with the existing bracha. Okay. Now I'd like to jump back to the second edition of Micha Mocha. Where am I here? So we mentioned before that Micha Mocha refers to Yitzurav, right? To the other creations of God, to the humanity at large. And what we like to do here, just as we've done with the others, is let's look at the context of the bracha in which it appears and ask, again, those same two questions. Number one, does the attention to Yitzurav at large fit with the larger context of the bracha? And more generally, what is this tefillah doing in this bracha and in the context of the themes of this bracha? So first, let's just do the superficial part of this, which is, if we take a quick look through this bracha, Togibor li'olam Hashem, Mechayim Esim, Atah Rav L'Hoshia, and so on, Mechal Kel Chayim B'Chesed, if you take a quick glance through this bracha, does the lack of focus on the Jewish people and rather a broad tefillah for humanity at large fit in the context of this bracha? And the answer is very obviously yes. Okay, that's the simple part of this, which is that there is no reference in this bracha, in this entire bracha, to the Jewish people at all. Right? There is a very glaring contrast between the first bracha of Shemoneh Esrei and the second bracha of Shemoneh Esrei. The first bracha is the parochial bracha, right? The bracha of Avos, as we were just talking about, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Mevi Goel, Ivnei Vnehem, Magen Avraham. The second bracha turns the focus entirely away from the Jewish people and is just about God, right? This is about the universal God, not about the God of the Jewish people. That's the whole theme of the second bracha of Shemoneh Esrei, which is known as the bracha of Gevuros, the bracha of the might of God. And here we focus about not on the perhaps surprising and unusual thing that God did, which is establish a relationship with one particular group of people. Here we take the step back and offer our recognition in every Shemoneh Esrei that we do of, well, what does God mean? What God is? Okay. And God is the transcendent God. God's existence is not about us. God's existence is about much more than us. Right. And so, and we talk about the great power and the omnipotence and might of the Ribono Shel Olam, which perhaps is the proper name to use for God in this context, the Ribono Shel Olam, the master of the universe. And so when we talk about Zocher Yitzurav L'Chayim Berachamim, so it makes sense that we're talking about his creations in general and not the Jewish people. But let's look a little bit more careful. Let me focus on one detail first. Just, is there any reference in this bracha to people at all? Right? There's no reference to the Jewish people. Okay. So much of this bracha is about the things that God does for people. Okay. He's mechaye mesim. He resurrects the dead. Somech noflim. He supports the falling. Rofei cholim. He heals the sick. Matir asurim. He frees the imprisoned. Right. All generic. Right. No reference to Jews. And then there's this one reference to not just to very specific people, the people falling, the people who are sick, the people who are in prison, but rather mikayem emunaso. He fulfills his trustworthiness or his loyalty. Lishene Afar. Right? What does Yishene Afar mean? Those who sleep in the dust. Right? Who are those who sleep in the dust? Well, that's a rather jarring synonym for people, right? Those who sleep in the dust. Right? Why do we call human beings those who sleep in the dust in the context of this bracha?
That's what happens when we die.
It is what happens when we die, correct.
And we were born. We were born from dust.
Okay, and the creation of human beings. Right. Okay. So, but, let's be very specific here. When it says Mechaye Mesim, so that's actually referring to the dead, right? Resurrecting the dead, right? When it says Mekayem Emunaso Lishene Afar, I shouldn't say when it says, when we say, right, in Shmoneh Esrei, Mekayem Emunaso Lishene Afar, that God fulfills his trustworthiness for those who sleep in the dust, it's not talking about dead people, right? It's calling, it's using that phrase to describe people in general, right? People, human beings, are characterized by the fact that we sleep in the dust, right? Meaning that there will come a day when we will be buried back in the ground, right? Meaning it's a poetic way to refer to us as, and we do this in English, we sometimes refer to people as mortals, right? That's what this means, right? That God has a certain loyalty to and fulfills his trustworthiness to mere mortals, right? That's really kind of the sense, if we were going to translate this into somewhat half poetic English, right? That's probably what we would say. So it's referring to death, but it's not referring to dead people, right? It's referring to people as creatures who die.
There's an alternative, maybe.
Yeah.
Shene Afar could also be the poor people.
You mean, you know, who literally sleep in the streets, you mean?
Nothing.
Right.
In other words, and God.
I hear what you're saying. I'm not convinced that that's the simple meaning of the phrase here, though. Okay, but could be. Now, why would it be that we would in Shmoneh Esrei use this very jarring description of people? Why wouldn't you just say Mekayim Emunaso? I don't know, ba'e olam, right? We have that expression elsewhere, right? Ba'e olam, those who dwell in the world, right? We have that phrase, in fact, in the davening of Rosh Hashanah, v'chol ba'e olam yavrun lefanecha lefnei marom, in Nusana Tokef, right? Or mekayim emunaso, lebnei adam, right? Why yishene afar? So there's a very simple answer to that question. What's the theme of
the bracha? Is mechaye hametim.
That's the concluding line of the bracha. That's true.
Concluding line. To the subject. So this is the closing thing. It has to do with Yecheskel's nevuah.
You mean the Natsamos Yeveshos?
Yeah.
That's maybe, although that's a Jewish people centric nevuah, so I'm not sure if that's necessarily true.
No, but also I think when he talks about Shene Afar, maybe he talks about our forefathers, that they are one of the peoples, because it's also for the Gvurot. It's a continuation.
Okay. In my opinion, this bracha really isn't about the Jewish people, okay? You're free to disagree. But I think there's something very simple. What's the theme of this bracha in general? What's it about? The whole bracha is about Gvuras Hashem, right? The whole point of, unlike the first bracha, which was about God, the sort of personal God, establishing a relationship with us, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and so on, right? The whole theme of this bracha is God's power, right? In the context of God's power, why do we say this bracha? We say this bracha so that we, in the beginning of Shmoneh Esrei, go into the rest of Shmoneh Esrei with the recognition of you know, of to use the common Hebrew expression, our shiflut, our humility in the face of God, right? The that we are standing before the Ribono Shel Olam, the Melech Malchei Hamlachim, and we are nothing next to him. And when we are talking about the great omnipotence and power of God, and so we contrast that with the human being, and we, instead of calling it a human being, we call it a mortal, right? Because the fact that we are mortal is what defines us as not divine. It defines us as who we will not be forever. In contrast to Hashem, whom we are talking about and whom we are, to whom we are offering praise in this bracha. Okay. So that's the difference. We are highlighting the difference between us and God, right? What's the next phrase? Michamocha ba'al givuros umido melach, right? Who is like you, the holder of the great of the great powers, and who could possibly be similar to you, right? Meaning we are not similar to you. We couldn't even pretend to be similar to you, and that's where the phrase Yishene Afar makes sense. It would be odd in the context of this bracha for us to be calling attention to, the Jewish people. If we talk about we're the chosen people, when we're calling attention to ourselves, talk about what makes us special, right? That's not what we're supposed to be doing in this bracha, right? In this bracha, we are as mere mortals standing before the transcendent God and talking about what makes him transcendent and special and all powerful, right? That's the theme of this bracha. Now, however, what makes this bracha, given that that's the theme of the bracha, what makes the bracha so interesting is looking at how we describe the great power of God, right? If you were if we were instead of talking about God, we were talking about basar v'dam, talking about flesh and blood, about human beings, and you were talking about a great and powerful king or emperor, right? And you wanted to describe the great power of that person, right? What makes him or her powerful? What can he or she do that reflects and demonstrates and illustrates how powerful they are?
Winning wars, enemies, keeping peace.
Okay, all of the above, right? Yeah. All of the above, right? What would we talk about? We would talk about the ability that that person has, the things he can do to other people. He can take away their stuff. He could kill them. He could overpower other kings and other countries and take their countries and their, right? In other words, we tend, when we think about the power of somebody and in what makes them powerful, what's a reflection and a manifestation of their power is their ability to overpower other beings, other people, and do things that the other people don't want, right? To take advantage of the other person's weakness as an expression of power. But what do we do in this bracha? What do we describe as the reflection of God's power?
Chesed.
Right. What does God do how does God's power manifest itself? Somech noflim, rofei cholim, matir asurim, mechaye mesim. Right, the great power of the Ribono Shel Olam is that, and what we love about the power of the Ribono Shel Olam is that he at least often uses that power to do good things for people, to do the kind of things that other beings who are not as all powerful as he can't do. We don't have the power to be rofei cholim, to heal the sick in the way that God does. We don't have the power to release the confined in the way that God does. And what's the one kind power of God that we really can't do at all? We can heal the sick a little bit, and we can free the imprisoned a little bit, and we can support the falling a little bit, just not like God. What's the one thing we absolutely cannot do? We cannot resurrect the dead. Correct. We cannot resurrect the dead. We cannot be Mechaye Mesim. Right. And that's why the ability to be Mechaye Mesim, the ability to resurrect the dead, is both the beginning and the end of this bracha. what do we choose to use to describe the great koach, the great power, the great gevura of God, ata gibor li olam Hashem, right? You are the eternally powerful. If we were saying that to a king of flesh and blood, what would we say? You are the eternal and powerful king. You hold my life in your hands, right? But what we would mean by that is that you could kill me, right? Here we say the exact opposite, mechaye mesimata, right? That you are the one who creates life. Right? Flesh and blood kings only have the ability to snuff out life. They don't have the ability to create life, but God can do both. God, it's true, God can snuff out life, but he can also create it. He can resurrect the dead. He created life to begin with, right? He, as somebody said before, he made people out of dust, the dust of the earth, right? And so that's the manifestation of the gevura of the Ribono Shel Olam that we choose to emphasize, that he's Rav Lehoshia, right? That he is a salvation. And of course, this, you know, this theme of this bracha serves, you know, obliquely as a lesson for us when we're saying this bracha, that when we're focusing on that's the reflection and manifestation of God's power, that of course it's a lesson to ourselves of how we should view our own, the more minimal powers that we have, and to try to use them, right, for chesed, for good in the world to the degree that we can, and not in a destructive way. Okay, so what is the theme of this bracha then is that we are calling attention to the might of God, but with a focus on the God's ability to use his might to do good, to do things that are helpful to people. And so now to kind of to come full circle now, so what's this addition to the Shemona Esrei for our Seretz Yimei Tshuva doing in this bracha? I'd like you to take note of something which not only is this is so overlooked in this tefillah. I actually not only is it overlooked, I once gave this shiur in a shul, and what I'm about to say, it wasn't just that it was overlooked, people resisted accepting it because they didn't want to accept it, okay, because it was so contrary to the way they usually read this line of Shemona Esrei, but it's clearly correct. This, unlike the other three additions to the Shemona Esrei, this line isn't a tefillah. Right? All the other three additions are all tefillos in the sense of we're asking Hashem during Aseres Yimei Tshuva to help us. Zachreinu L'chaim, remember us for life. Uchsov l'chayim tovim kol b'nei v'risecha, inscribe your people for life. B'sefer chayim bracha v'shalom nizacher v'nikasev l'fanecha, please let us be inscribed. This line, nichamoch avharacham, is not a request. It is purely descriptive. We are not asking for anything in this line of Shemona Esrei. This is not a Seretz Yimei Tshuva where we're begging Hashem to inscribe us in the book of life. That doesn't appear here at all. All this is a description of God. Just like we said, Micha Mocha Bal Givurosu Mido Melach, Melch Memisu Mechaya Matzmiach Yeshua, who is like you, the mighty God, who can compare to you, the king who brings death and life and who brings salvation to blossom. We also say, Micha Mocha Avarachamim, who is like you, the father of mercy, Zocher Yitzrav L'chaim Barachamim, who remembers his creations for life with mercy. This is entirely descriptive. We are not asking for anything. Okay. And in fact, this line, fits again, once we've learned the themes and the content of this bracha of Shemona Esrei, fits perfectly into the theme of this bracha. Because the whole bracha is about recognizing God's great power and his ability to do things, and with a focus on his ability to do good things for the world and for the people of the world. And so now that it's Aseres Yimei Tshuva, well, what's one of the good things that we are, that God can do for the world that we're thinking about right now, right? It's this ability to be mechayeh, right? But more specifically, in Aseres Yimei Tshuva, we're thinking about God's ability to
maintain life, right? Not to create life, not to resurrect life, but to keep life going. That's what we're all davening for, right? In Aseres Yimei Tshuva, that the living, we the living are davening that we should stay living, right? And so we throw in an additional line, but not asking God to inscribe us in the book of life, but adding another thing to the list. You know, there's one more example of God's great expression of his great power for kindness. And that is when he remembers his creations for life and he does it mercifully. That's why this line is added to this bracha of Shemona Esrei at this time. And which is again why there's no mention here of Jews, right? This has nothing to do with Jews, because this is all about describing God's power. It's not about asking for us for anything, for parochial things. It's just a timely and appropriate addition to the list of great things and great chasadim that God does, and the mercy that he shows when he does so. And let's not forget that in our tradition, the time of Rosh Hashanah is not just the time of being inscribed in one book or another for the Jewish people, right? As we just called attention to earlier, is expressed in Rishana Tokef, V'chol Ba'i Olam, over in Lefanecha Kivnei Maron, that all of the people of the world are being judged on Rosh Hashanah. It was true that that tradition is limited to Rosh Hashanah, and not that in our tradition that the rest of us here, Simi Tshuva and Yom Kippur, really is more of a Jewish focused thing. But this line in Shmoneh Esrei is more broad than that. Okay, so we are out of time, but this is a good stopping point. We've done our more focused work about Zecheinu L'Chaim, about B'Sefer Chaim, about Micha Mocha V'Rachamim, and next week in Yirtzeh Hashem we will turn our attention to the last one, which we haven't focused on yet, which is Chsov L'Chaim Tovim Kol B'nei V'Risacha. And just as we have done here, where not only have we learned something about these particular additions to the Shemona Esrei, but we've also learned, I hope, hopefully something about the Shemona Esrei itself and about the brachos of the Shemona Esrei in which these tfilos appear. Amir Sashem, we will learn something more about the Shemona Esrei as well next week when we look more carefully at the shortest, but to me, most interesting of the four, Oksov L'chaim Tov and Kol B'nei V'Risach. Thank you very much. Good day, everyone.
Thank you. You have my burger.
Can Shenei Afar refer to people who are oblivious to the world and not aware of what we're responsible for?
It could. You know, you see, there's always the question of, you know, what's the simplest meaning, almost like when we learn Chumash, you know, the Pshat and the Drash, right? You know, there can be a lot of deep and you know, pregnant, you know, meaning in the Shemona Esrei. It's a very deep text, right? So there might be a lot of things we can learn from them. You know, what I offered in this shiur was what to me seemed to be the simplest, you know, meaning of the words. But you know, I'm sure this could be, you know, much more can be mined from this from these texts than what I'm saying.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
I put two questions in the chat, but
if
you want to save it and look at it.
Well, I can take a quick look now. Unless the Torah in Motion needs the Zoom for another, I don't know if there's another shiur going on soon.
We're okay. You can. You know, I should have probably mentioned it to you in advance. Maybe next week, if you want to leave 5 minutes or so, and then you can go back through the chat.
Okay, I just this is sort of part one, so I was kind of
chat is saved. So if you see a few people, you know, I would say that probably more than half the class is left. So I don't know if anybody who wrote a note is still here, but if you want to take a look at it, it's saved. It's saved with the Zoom video.
Right.
But yeah, maybe next time you can try and leave a few minutes, and then it's hard to look at the chat while you're working. So
I can't do. So right. Yeah. Correct. Okay. Anyway, so I can take a look at if somebody I can. So you Dafka prefer that I save answering these questions for next week when more people are here? Or,
no, I mean no, okay. It's really up to
I'll take a minute now. I'll take a minute now to answer them. That's fine. Okay. Okay, so I'll answer. So first, just a quick question. Somebody asked, was the mention of Parnassa added to the tefillah at a time when the economy was depressed? So, you know, I don't know. Listen, you know, for most of Jewish history, you know, I think that until rather recently, I think the Jewish economy was always depressed. There were always, Jews in tough straits and most times. I honestly don't know is the answer. I can't answer that question. Okay, why is the phrase Koneh HaKol there? So that was earlier in the Shem when we were talking about the first Bracha of Shemoneh Esrei, which was about the Jewish people. Okay, so Koneh HaKol, which means God who is the acquirer or owner of everything, right? Which is a universal statement rather than a parochial statement, right? So why is that doing there? So I think the answer to that question is, and this really goes to the fact that, as I mentioned before, you know, there's more to say about each of these brachos, right? I'm obviously doing this more in the context of the Aseret Yemei Tshuva editions and trying to do it quickly. If we were to do a close reading of the whole bracha, you know, even more carefully, there'd be more to say. But just as a quick comment on this, I know that Rabbi Kelman does a series on the Siddur. I don't know if he addresses these things. But you see, one of the ways in which the specialness of the attention to the Jewish people is expressed is by noting that it didn't have to be that way, right? In other words, if it's not special for a father to love his children, right? Because they're his children, right? The reason why it's special for God to have this special relationship with the Jewish people is because it didn't have to be that way, because God created all people. And yet, despite the fact that he created all people, he chose to have this special relationship with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, right? So it's in the contrast that the special character is noticeable and is expressed, right? And so that's why it's not just Koneh HaKol, right? The whole bracha begins, Gadol Gibor Vahanora Kel Elyon, right? That we do describe God in these kind of transcendent terms in the first bracha also, but because it was introduced by Elokei Avram Gitzelke Yaakov, it seems, again, this is my reading, you can disagree, it seems that those things are brought up in the service of trying to express that dichotomy, right? That God created everyone and yet chose the Jewish people. I think that's the theme of that. That's, by the way, the even more explicitly the theme of the very well-known Tefillah Adon Olam, right? The Adon Olam, the first half of Adon Olam is all about God's transcendence. Shar Malach B'Terem Kol Yitzir Nivra, right? He was there before he was the king before anything was created, right? V'Vuhaya V'Hoveh V'Hiyeh B'Tifara, right? He was, he is, he will be, right? That's the whole. That's the end of the first half. Right? He's one, there's no other, right? But then what does the second half start? Right? And even though God is this transcendent being, he's there for me, right? Hashem li velo ira, right? That God is a personal God, even though he's also a transcendent God, right? So and that's not necessarily about the Jewish people. That's more about more generally the contrast between the transcendent God and the personal God, right? So that I think is what's going on there. Okay. That's a very interesting question, this next question. I was wondering the same thing myself, right? Would it not be more logical to go from the general to the particular and reverse the first two brachos, right? Why does Shemoneh Esrei start with the Elokei Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov and move on afterwards to the second thing? That's a good question. I could probably have some thoughts on it, but I don't want to say anything off the cuff because I would want to think about that a little bit. And I'm sure it's been written about and talked about before. It's not something I've researched. But I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, it's the first thing that I thought of when that occurred to me is the Aseres Hadibros, right? Where the Aseres Hadibros famously begin with Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Otzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Mibeis Avadim, right? That the initial description of God in the Aseres Hadibros is the God who took us out of Egypt, right? The kind of the personalization of God as our God, of the Jewish people's God is there at the very beginning. And there's instinctively to me some parallel between that and starting Shemoneh Esrei in this way. Stay tuned. I think the shiur we're going to have next week might actually relate to that to that question.
May I direct you to something else, which would seem to be totally unrelated, but sure. I think should give you food for thought in terms of dealing with this question, which was one I put up. In Parshat Lech Lecha, when God tells Abraham to go, when Avraham Avinu gets to Eretz Yisrael, God says to him, you've arrived, this is the place, I promise that this is going to be for you and your children. Well, Avraham knows that he's not going to live to see that promise fulfilled. It's just a promise. Nevertheless, he builds a mizbeach as gratitude. It says so. The pasuk tells you that God made him a promise. In gratitude for that promise, Avraham Avinu believes in the promise, is convinced that it will be fulfilled, and therefore he builds a mizbeach. In the very next pasuk, Avraham goes somewhere else and builds another mizbeach. Why? It has nothing to do. There's nothing there. There's nothing further. It's not for gratitude. It says in the pasuk why. And I think that there's a connection between that and the first bracha, why we talk about Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. Food for thought.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you. Okay. I actually have to give another shiur at 2:15, and I have to go 7 floors up in the building to do so. So I kind of have to run at this point. But thank you very much, and I look forward to next week.
Have a good week, everybody. Bye-bye.